The leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, Mike Nesbitt, with us this morning. What's wrong with two people at the top of government, Mike, deciding they want a particular man to do a particular job?
There mightn't be anything wrong with that at all, Stephen. But there are two issues that we don't have enough information on. One is the role David Gordon is going into, and the other is the process used to appoint him. In terms of the role, is he replacing Stephen Grimason? Because at the moment, there is a head of the Executive Information Service, which would appear on the face of it to be the role, or similar to the role they envisage for David Gordon. Stephen's standing down. He is, by the way, like David, ex-BBC, ex-political correspondent. Clearly, if they're not putting him in, David Gordon in as a civil servant, there's something Stephen Grimason was unable to do as a civil servant that they believe David can do as a political appointment. But the question is, why is he not a civil servant? Why is David Gordon not a special advisor? Legitimate questions, which we have not had answered yet. Secondly, Stephen Grimason's name is all over a paper that the Executive Office Committee is due to look at on Wednesday, because he's not just head of the Information Service, he's in charge of the executive offices in Brussels and Beijing and Washington. So we legitimately should be asking, well, who's in charge of those now, and how does that fit into David Gordon's role? So there are a lot of questions about what the role actually is.
Do you have a problem with Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster not having an open board process, but essentially saying there's a particular man or woman, but it was a man in this case, that they want, and rather than going through the farce of a board pretending that they were looking at other people, they have chosen who they actually wanted? Have you got a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with them making that argument before they do it. The executive office, like all the statutory committees, exists to offer advice to ministers. Now, the horse has bolted on this occasion. I would have had no difficulty with them coming to us and saying, this is what we are thinking. Now, they were with us in June, and they didn't alert us that this was their thinking. Stephen Grimason came to see us, and he didn't alert that he was thinking of standing down, but maybe that predated the discussions, and we need to know that. But the other issue, of course, is the process of the appointment. And what they did was they used the royal prerogative. I would like to know how often have they done that in the past, because these are very specific powers, Stephen. These are powers that the monarch reserves to him or herself to deploy without reference to Parliament.
Yeah, but the reality is the powers are there, and they are legal powers, and they are there. So Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster have used a mechanism which they are legally allowed to do.
Absolutely. But what is that power? What did Martin McGuinness do? Martin McGuinness, the self-styled proud Republican, conferred upon himself the powers of a monarch. King Martin McGuinness appointed David Gordon, or as one of my colleagues said, Queen Marlene the First appointed. What I would like to know
so
is...
So when you were in the...
Stephen. When you use the power of the royal prerogative, do you have to consult Buckingham Palace? Do you have to consult Downing Street? Do you have to consult the Secretary of State? Do they have to say that's okay? Even as a matter of courtesy, do you say, I'm deploying this power? Because it is a very particular power to go beyond the Assembly or Parliament and say, we are doing this anyway. And I think it should only be used in extreme circumstances, like foreign affairs, and particularly when we're going to war.
When you were in the executive, did King Mike Nesbitt appoint special advisers without an open process? Did you use your power? Did King Mike kick in?
No.
So you boarded it? You boarded your
we
special
boarded
advisers,
it.
Did you?
We did, Steve.
Did you? It was advertised. In which paper?
It was advertised online, which would be consistent, I believe, with what the Executive Information Service currently did. I don't think they advertise in the press anymore. Could be wrong, but I think that was certainly the intention.
What about your predecessor, King Trimble?
I'm not answerable for David Trimble. Get up to date, Stephen. You asked the question hoping to get an answer. You got the wrong one. You've lost out.
Yeah, but it's not about losing. I'm not about losing. I'm about getting the facts, because there is a broader discussion here, Mike, and it's this. Should every single political appointment be boarded? Essentially, should there be a job interview for every single political appointment? And that's a separate discussion in itself because it involves most political parties in this country. For example, there are quite a few political parties, I'm sure yours is one of them, where family members, and I'm not saying you personally, but family members are employed by the MLA using public money, and those jobs are not advertised. Yes. Should every political appointment be advertised?
Not necessarily.
Why not?
If you make a case that there is a specialist service that you need and you can identify only one person who has those skills and the willingness to come and do it, then you can make an argument. But
that's exactly what Martin and Arlene have done with David Gordon.
But they didn't do it in advance. They didn't make the argument in advance. They made it retrospectively, and not at the first time of asking, at the second time of asking. The second follow-up question was the one where they said, we changed the law. Stephen, I was a victims commissioner, if you remember. I went through a process, but it was for a single commissioner. And at the end of the day, the then FM and DFM, Dr. Paisley and Mr. McGuinness, decided to appoint four people, busting right through that whole process. And there was a legal challenge on the basis that one of the people who was offered the job said, I applied to be the sole commissioner. I don't want to be one of four. And Justice Gillen said it was reasonable for the FM and the DFM basically to lock themselves in a room quietly without officials or special advisors and sort it out. So there is a precedent for saying that the FM and the DFM can act in particular ways. But having learnt the lesson, or not having learnt the lesson, of the four commissioners, why didn't they say publicly, this is what we are going to do, this is how we are going to do it, and this is why we are going to do it.
So had you known about this in advance, would you have objected to David Gordon taking the job he has?
I can't tell you that. What I would have said
is... Well, that's the point.
But what I'm saying to you is, if they had come to the committee of the executive office, whose primary function is to advise them, and said, here's what we're going to do, and we'd had the argument, if they'd made the case, I could see how I could have supported it. But they did not make the case. They did it secretly.
But we are where we are now. Have you got a problem with the executive office having a spin doctor?
If that is the role. Once they explain to me exactly what the role is, how it relates to the executive information service, because their statement said, he will work in parallel with or alongside the executive service. Once I know why they didn't want him to be a civil service and why they didn't want him to be a special advisor, then I will have the evidence base to make an informed decision on whether I support the appointment or not.
There will be a head of the executive information service, right?
Well, will there? You tell me. The biggest Cullen head count is underway at the moment in the civil service, the voluntary exit scheme.
Does David Gordon
thousands of jobs are going.
Does David Gordon have the authority to tell the Executive Information Service what type of message to put out?
That's the very question, or one of the very questions, that I would like to get an answer to. And if they had come to the committee and said, here's what we're proposing, those questions would have been asked. They would have given their answers, and on the basis of the answers, I, for one, would be able to tell you whether I support this or not.
What are you going to do about this?
Well, we have, hopefully, an urgent question in. I will be bringing it up to the committee, and let me make very clear, the committee has not formed its opinion. So while I'm speaking personally, I may be chair of that committee, but I will chair that committee impartially and independently. They must come to an opinion about this. I will pose the sort of questions that we have been discussing over the last number of minutes, but the committee will come to a view on that. The final issue actually relates to David Gordon himself. Did he know that the law was going to be changed for him to be appointed? And that is a legitimate question, Stephen, and I'm not trying to personalise this, but it's a legitimate question, and he would agree with his journalism hat on that it's a legitimate question to ask.
Well, David Gordon, we asked to come onto the programme today. He said he is not commenting. He is still a BBC employee, so it would be difficult for him to do so. Your critics will say, Mike Nesbitt, that you're sounding desperate this morning because here's Sinn Féin and the DUP finding a way to run government effectively for the people of Northern Ireland. Your desperation is that they have found a skilled operator to communicate a message where government is getting on with doing what it's supposed to, looking after people's lives. You can squabble and moan from the sidelines. You took yourself out and now they're getting on with running the country.
Are you saying Stephen Grimason was not a skilled communicator? Because that's what you're implying.
Don't put words in my mouth.
That is the implication.
The only person that's brought that up is you.
I listened to what you said, and the implication to me, very clearly, is that you are saying Stephen Grimason was not.
I am saying that Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster have found commonality in a different role than Mr. Grimason, and they have said that they are trying now to actually make government effectively work for people in Northern Ireland. Meanwhile, and you people, and Jim Allister and Colm Eastwood can sit in the sidelines all you want. They're getting on and running the country. How powerless are you now?
And people who look to their political leaders to be men and women of principle see the great Republican, Martin McGuinness, using the royal prerogative. King Marty says, I anoint, I lay my oiled hands on the head of Mr. Gordon.
Mike Nesbitt, thank you very much indeed.